This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel continues to kill more Palestinians and destroy more civilian infrastructure in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal onslaught. The UN chief warns Israel's war on Gaza threatens international peace and security and is turning into an irreversible catastrophe for the entire region. And praising the Palestinian resistance's powerful response to Israeli aggression against Gaza, Iran says the coming days will be dreadful for the Israeli regime. Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. Now more than 2 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on Gaza, the regime is pressing ahead with airstrikes and ground attacks throughout the blockaded territory. New Israeli strike on two homes in Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza has left nearly 30 Palestinians dead. Civilian infrastructure, including schools, hospitals, and mosques, are still among the main targets of the regime's air raids. Gaza officials say Israel is deliberately destroying healthcare facilities in northern Gaza, where over 800,000 Palestinians are left without access to medical services. In the south, the regime has intensified attacks on Palestinians. City of Khan Yunis has been targeted by intense airstrikes, which have killed scores of Palestinians there. Israeli gunboats are also pounding coastal areas of Khan Yunis and Rafah. There are no media reports on numbers of fatalities there yet, but overall death toll has now exceeded 16,200, mostly women and children. Ghazi Hamad, a senior official with the Hamas resistance movement, says course of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, a small number of resistance fighters dispelled the invincibility myth of the Israeli army forever.
In Al-Aqsa storm, we have been able to break the awe, which they always brag about when they say that it's an invincible army, an invincible state, and no Arab army can come close to it and do any harm to it. But thank God we were able to create a glorious history whereby we struck a very, very severe blow to this enemy and broke its awe and also its army and its security theory with a small number, not more than 1,000 fighters from the Qassam Brigades who were able to destroy this theory forever. This has been shattered, this image, and will not be restored. And so, therefore, the liberation of Palestine is closer than we imagined. Those who always dreamt of returning to Haifa and Yaffa and Raqqa and Nasra, we are closer than before. It's true that we paid a very high price, the blood of our people and our children and women. However, this has been the case ever since 1948. We'll have been paying the price. Hundreds of thousands of martyrs, hundreds of thousands of prisoners, hundreds of thousands of wounded, and millions of refugees and displaced throughout the world. We are paying and paying the price. However, we are also proud to be sacrificing for the sake of our cause and our ummah and our people. This cancer must be eradicated from the body of this nation, of this ummah.
The UN Secretary General warns intensifying Israeli war on Gaza is threatening international peace. In a letter to the Security Council, Antonio Guterres said, rapidly worsening situation in Gaza is turning into an irreversible catastrophe for Palestine and the region. He cautioned about severe risk of collapse of the humanitarian system within Gaza, emphasizing the critical need to avert such an outcome. Guterres has actually invoked a UN Charter article which allows him to warn the Security Council of what he deems a threat to global peace. He urged a 15-member council to use all means available to stop Israel's brutal massacre of Palestinians. Iran's foreign minister warns coming days will be dreadful for the Israeli regime, given Palestinian resistance's powerful response to the regime's aggression in Gaza. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comment in a phone call with his Qatari counterpart, Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Al Thani. Two ministers condemned Israeli atrocities against the women and children of Gaza and the occupied West Bank, urging the international community to take immediate steps to end the regime's war crimes, genocide, and blatant violations of international law. Earlier, Amir Abdullahian had called on Egypt to open the Rafah border crossing without any delays or preconditions to facilitate the flow of food, medicine, and fuel into the besieged territory. The Palestinian ambassador to the UN, Riyad Mansour, and representatives of a number of Arab states have converged on the UN headquarters to condemn the Israeli massacre in Gaza. During a speech, Mansour called on the UN Security Council to draft a resolution for an immediate ceasefire.
We in the Arab group, we were in full consultations, and we had an emergency meeting yesterday in which we observed and analyzed what is happening globally speaking. We took note of the summit of Gulf states, in which they called, among other things, for an immediate ceasefire. We observed the UN system and all organizations saying that their systems are on the verge of complete collapse, and therefore they are demanding a ceasefire to be able to function. We noted the message of Mr. Borrell, the foreign minister of the European Union, in which he said, on the basis of the situation of UN agencies who are calling for a ceasefire, in essence, he is also calling for a ceasefire. Based on all these things, we came also before them to the conclusion that we cannot move further without having the Security Council shouldering its responsibility and to act or react to a draft resolution calling for a ceasefire. We are in 11 o'clock. We will assemble here, but tomorrow the number of ambassadors will be larger because we are inviting the 57 members of the OIC to be with us, so that we can make our message clear, crystal clear, and as strong as possible in condemning what is happening and demanding, an immediate ceasefire to stop the aggression, to stop the fighting.
A senior Hamas official has condemned Israeli incessant attacks on southern Gaza, which had been declared a safe zone by the Israeli regime once it ordered people to flee there. Osama Hamdan, who's also the rep for Hamas in Lebanon, said the so-called safe areas announced by the Israeli regime are actually death traps. Elsewhere in his remarks, Hamdan held Israel responsible for the obstruction, that is, of the extension of temporary truce in Gaza, which expired last Friday. He stressed movements will not accept negotiations with the occupying regime while under fire. Hamdan noted the sole way to solve the Palestinian issue and bring stability to the region is to end occupation of all Palestinian territory. Israeli forces continue killing while they kill five Palestinians, two teenagers in the West Bank as regime presses ahead with deadly raids. The Palestinian Health Ministry said a Palestinian teenager was killed by a bullet to the chest in the town of Yabad, west of Jenin. Another youth was killed in the Balata refugee camp near the city of Nablus. A 65-year-old disabled man was also killed when Israeli force shot him in the head in the city of Tukaram. Earlier, the health ministry had announced deaths of two more Palestinians in a village in the north of the West Bank. We don't have their names yet, but since onset of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, the regime has killed over 250 Palestinians and detained scores more in the occupied West Bank. Meanwhile, Israel has approved plans to build 1,738 new settler units in the occupied East Al-Quds amid the regime's genocidal onslaught on Gaza. Peace Now, which is an Israel-based NGO, said the new settler units will effectively obstruct the last remaining corridor connecting two major Palestinian neighborhoods in East Al-Quds with the rest of the city. It added that the plan makes creation of a Palestinian urban continuum in East Al-Quds practically impossible. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry said on Tuesday that Israel has taken advantage of international concerns over the war in Gaza to approve the construction of the new settlement. Ministry added regime plans to flood Al-Quds with settlements and settlers to separate the city from its Palestinian surroundings. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law as they've been constructed on occupied land. Hezbollah engages in an exchange of fire with the Israeli regime along the Lebanese border. Regime has targeted residential buildings in Lebanon's Meis Ej Jabal, and in retaliation, a resistance movement hit some Israeli sites and occupied Sheba farms. Here's Mariam Saleh with some details.
Israelis have intensified their shelling, it seems. And today, we know that in the town of Meis Ej Jabal, they have destroyed a full house. We still don't know if it was empty, evacuated, or there was anybody in there. It's not clear, but we do know that there were some people, as a result of the shrapnel, who have been wounded. We will, of course, follow that up to know if there are any human casualties, but the phosphorus bombs, the drone bombs, all continue on a daily basis. And we're talking about throughout the border. We're talking about all types of, and you can see, of course, from the images yourself, how in all the towns from the coastline in Naqoura until the towns of Khiam near Sheba Farms, Shuba Hills, and those areas which have always been under attack by the Israelis. And Hezbollah has also, of course, launched one operation today in response and retaliation to these bombings against the radar position of the Israelis in the occupied Sheba Farms.
Yemeni forces conduct new missile attacks on Israeli targets. Ballistic missiles hit targets in al-Rashrash or Eilat. Yemeni army says it will continue these anti-Israeli operations until the regime ends its war on Gaza. Meanwhile, Hissam al-Assad, an official with Yemen's Ansarullah movement, has called for the evacuation of people that reside in al-Rashrash. He noted Port City should be evacuated as it's already emptied ships over the retaliatory strikes. Also in support of Palestinians, Iraqi resistance forces have launched drone strikes on U.S. airbase of Ain al-Assad in western Iraq and al-Harir airbase in Erbil. Iraqi resistance factions have targeted U.S. bases in the region over 70 times in recent weeks in response to Washington's support for Israel's war on Gaza. A pro-Palestinian conference has been held in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring light to the cause of Palestine and the role of the Muslim world in the face of Israeli atrocities. Ramatullah Baghban reports.
Millay University in Kabul has hosted a pro-Palestine conference, dubbed Palestine and the Responsibilities of Islamic Nations, with attendees including religious scholars, Taliban authorities, university lecturers, and students, discussing the pressing issue of Palestine. Participants voiced their concern and support for Gazans in the face of Israeli brutal aggression, while calling for unity among Muslims.
The Palestine
oppressed Palestinian Muslims have been resisting for their freedom and dignity against the occupying Zionist regime for more than seven decades. They have been in the very forefront of the fight against evil and protecting Islamic values. The scenes we've been witnessing since October in Gaza are saddening and frustrating. A clear crime against humanity is happening here, with the whole world watching, in particular those who have always claimed to be defending human rights.
We Muslims are oppressed globally today. All wars, insults, aggressions, and attacks are carried out on us. Muslims must question why. The Holy Quran clearly tells Muslims no one helps you but yourself. So Muslims must not expect any goodness or assistance from the West or the US. We should unite to help save ourselves because our common enemy takes issue with our values, faith, and worldviews. The Palestinian cause is a test for Muslims, and may they awaken and pass the test successfully.
During the conference, rights activists took the stage to draw attention to the egregious human rights violations and atrocities perpetrated by Israel against the Palestinians. They vehemently condemned international inaction and accused the global community of complicity in Israel's crimes. Urging for immediate action, they emphasized the need to exert greater pressure and take concrete steps to bring an end to the occupation and siege in the Palestinian territories.
Israel has been relentlessly massacring innocent children, women, medical workers, patients, and volunteers in its indiscriminate attacks. It is not justified nor permitted by any law. They have killed doctors and assaulted hospitals, which should be protected under humanitarian law. This shows the insanity and cruelty of the occupying regime. We are praying and calling for an immediate end to such horrific acts by Israel.
The conference concluded with a declaration that affirmed the participants' commitment to backing Palestine and continuing their efforts to raise awareness and mobilize action in support of the Palestinian cause. This conference is a means for Afghans to show their support for Palestine. They also urge other Muslims around the world to unite for the cause and victory of Palestinians. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
History did not begin on October 7th. What took place that day followed more than 75 years of Zionist settler colonialism, and it was triggered by the unbearable conditions in Gaza amid the Zionist regime's 16-year siege and imprisonment of more than 2 million people in the territory. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, on October 7th, the armed wing of Hamas resistance movement, Al-Qassam Brigades, breached the high-tech militarized barrier that the Zionist regime has used to imprison Palestinians in Gaza for more than 16 years. The armed group ransacked military bases and briefly seized control of several settlements. In the hours and days that followed, the Zionist regime's Western allies and leading media organizations were quick to call the attack unprovoked, aiming to justify an Israeli regime response that has already killed more than 16,000 Palestinians across Gaza and the occupied West Bank. The October 7th attack was indeed unprecedented, but to call it unprovoked reflects a deliberate attempt to obscure the fact that the Zionist regime created the violent conditions that rendered a violent response inevitable. Today, nearly 2 months into the Gaza massacre, the Zionist regime forces are killing and maiming yet another generation of Palestinians and provoking the next cycle of violence. History did not begin on October 7th. What took place that day followed more than 75 years of Zionist settler colonialism, and it was triggered by the unbearable conditions in Gaza amid the Zionist regime's 16-year siege and imprisonment of more than 2 million people in the territory. Most of Gaza's residents are the descendants of refugees who were forced to flee their homes across Palestine in 1948 in the face of rampaging Zionist militias. Gaza came under Egyptian control until 1967, when the fabricated regime of Israel invaded and seized the territory. The grip of Israeli occupation tightened with each year that followed, isolating Gaza's inhabitants from the rest of Palestine and the world. In the face of relentless Palestinian resistance, the Zionist regime withdrew from Gaza in 2005, only to impose a suffocating siege that has continued ever since. The truth is, the Zionist regime's occupation of Gaza never ended. It merely transformed. Today, Gaza is often described as the world's largest open-air prison. But even this description fails to do justice to the extent of Israel's brutality. What the Zionist regime is doing in Gaza is far worse. It is a project solely dedicated to the collective punishment of an entire population that has dared to resist. With more than 2.3 million people packed into an area of about 365 square kilometers and enclosed behind a high-security electronic fence and concrete wall, Gaza is one of the most densely populated places on Earth. The Zionist regime's blockade looms over just about every aspect of life for Palestinians in Gaza. The Israeli regime controls who enters and exits the Gaza Strip with an archaic permit system routinely used as leverage over the entire population. Surrounded by Israel and Egypt, most Palestinians in Gaza have never been allowed to leave the enclave. The fabricated regime of Israel even controls its airspace and territorial waters. The blockade has devastated Gaza's economy and prompted what the United Nations has termed de-development, a situation in which development is not merely impeded, but actively reversed. This has left nearly half of the population unemployed, with the rate exceeding 70% among youth. For many Palestinians in Gaza, life is a struggle for survival. Between 2007 and 2010, the Zionist regime's authorities maintained a calorie count of Palestinians' nutritional requirements to ensure that they only received the bare minimum of food to avoid starvation. And in just the first 6 months of 2023, nearly 400 children in Gaza were denied permits to go to the occupied West Bank for urgent health care. As if the blockade wasn't enough, the Zionist regime carried out protracted military onslaughts against Gaza in 2008 to 2009, 2012, 2014, and 2021, killing thousands of people and exacerbating already dire living conditions by crippling the territory's infrastructure. Homes, schools, and hospitals have been destroyed, while attempts to rebuild have been hampered by the Zionist regime's refusal to allow construction materials, such as steel and cement, into Gaza. In 2014, the Zionist regime targeted Gaza's sole power plant, aggravating an energy crisis that persists to this day, with an average of only 13 hours of electricity a day. While the physical carnage caused by the Zionist regime's brutal assaults has been extensively documented, far less attention has been given to the human toll and the psychological devastation wrought upon an entire generation. An 18-year-old in Gaza is now living through their fifth major Israeli regime assault. They have seen friends and family massacred by Israeli regime missiles, artillery shells, and sniper rounds. Meanwhile, 9 out of 10 children in Gaza suffer from debilitating conflict-related trauma. With children accounting for around half of Gaza's population, the future for many is bleak. The torture of Gaza, however, is only part of the story. Under the direct protection of the Zionist regime's military and with explicit encouragement from Israel's far-right leaders, Zionist settlers have carried out deadly programs in Palestinian towns such as Hawara. In recent months, entire communities between Ramallah and Ariha have been cleared out by Zionist settler violence. Even before October 7th, 2023 was shaping up to be the deadliest year for Palestinians since the UN started tracking fatalities in 2006. Across historic Palestine, the fabricated regime of Israel has been tightening its occupation and basking in the glow of impunity. Now, by remaining silent as the Israeli regime renders Gaza unlivable, the international community is condemning Palestinians to a hopeless future. Those lucky enough to survive Israel's unprecedented assault have nowhere to go. The Zionist regime's military has laid waste to much of northern Gaza, destroying half of the buildings and obliterating entire neighborhoods. Gaza's already overburdened critical infrastructure has been shattered, and after forcing hundreds of thousands of civilians to flee northern Gaza, the Israeli regime is now gearing up to turn its attention to the south. By allowing the Israeli regime to get away with genocide, the international community is complicit in creating a new crisis that will make the pre-7 October status quo pale in comparison. To call October 7th unprovoked ignores both history and the reality that people who have known nothing but the violence of ethnic cleansing, genocide, Zionist settler colonial rule, their entire lives would eventually reach a breaking point. The results might be grotesque, as all violence is, but they will never match the scale of the structural oppressive violence that gave birth to the cycle in the first place. What happened on October 7th was not a random outburst. It was the response of a brutalized people conducted in the language their colonizers taught them. This is neither an argument for nor against armed resistance. To the Zionist regime and its backers, there is no distinction. The Zionist regime's long history of crushing all forms of Palestinian resistance, both nonviolent and armed, is evidence that the issue was never the method, but rather the fact that Palestinians have dared to resist their oppression at all. For years, the international community has embraced the fallacy that the Palestinian plight could be ignored, swept under the rug.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Ladies' Favorite Program, Muslim Lady. Well, once more, I'm here as your host. I'm Asma, at your service. And today, we have Brother Mustafa with us as the guest. Assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome.
Walaikum assalam. Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm Mustafa, and I'm also a student here. I am researching psychology and Islamic studies here.
So that's very great. Thank you for being here. As the ritual of this program goes, we usually have another lady to help us, but this time now it's just like looking from the other side of the story.
Yeah.
Because it's always us talking about us. Now let's another.
I think we're all human beings, right?
Exactly.
And if you had a lady speaking about men, I don't think anyone would really even object to that.
Exactly.
Right? And of course, when we're studying psychology, you know, this is a big topic, you know, our role as... what roles we play as fathers, as mothers, as genders. So it's definitely a good topic to speak about.
Exactly. Yeah. So as a person who has studied psychology and knows already about all of those stuff, then you are qualified enough.
Definitely. I have some ideas that I hope I can share today with you guys.
Inshallah. Yes, of course. So let's just start it with this very basic question. As you know, women has got a really big role nowadays in society. They are not just a simple lady like the angel in the house doing all the chores and taking care of the children or whatsoever. They are right now doctors. They are engineers. They do great stuff. They are sharing some social responsibilities. They go to work. And at the same time, they are doing their responsibilities at home.
Right.
But what we see right now, aside from the number of the children in each house, is the fact that the responsibilities of a mother are starting to get weaker and weaker just as we go further in this modern life.
Yeah. So a big part of, you know, our current modern lifestyle is actually rooted in psychology, right?
Yeah.
And you've pointed to the fact that you're seeing, for example, mothers becoming weaker and weaker, or they're not able to, for example, play that role to the same extent. Before I really like jump into the topic, I think it's important to understand that there is a difference between sort of Islamic psychology and like modern psychology, right?
Yeah, and Western psychology.
Right. So, and even within Western psychology, what I think a lot of people don't realize is that it's a new field of study. It's only maybe about 100 to 130 years old.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? And within that, there are so many different points of views, right? That it's just almost like a religion, I would say, in the sense that there's different sects, there's different schools of thought, and how they view a human being. And how we view a human being has a huge impact on how we sort of behave in our day-to-day lives, right? So let me try to make that a little bit more easier to understand, in the sense that, for example, if you don't believe that you have a soul, right, which modern psychology doesn't believe, right?
Yeah.
Modern psychology, then you're
we
only...
we have a psyche and that's it.
Yeah, then you're only going to be viewing the human being just as a physical person, right? And you're only going to be seeing, for example, a woman as just as a physical being, or as a man as a physical being. And that completely changes, for example, the dynamics between how we interact and we behave, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas Islamic psychology says, hey, no, like we actually have a soul, we have divine guidance. Not everything is based just on experiments and, you know, on just like lab work.
Not everything could be answered by science.
Right, exactly. So one of the, I think, problems we're seeing is that the role of the mother has sort of been almost like undermined, I would say.
Yeah.
Right? The real role of a mother. For example, I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day, and he lives in the West, right? He's not a Muslim. And he was debating with me. He was saying that, you know, we don't really need even mothers in the sense to raise children, right? That's the extent to what I would say Western psychology has reached to, right?
So there comes a question,
yeah,
that if then we don't need a mother, then who's going to take care of those children? Who's going to nurture them? But then answer me after the break.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So that's devastating to think of a home without a mother. So right. You're listening to Muslim Lady. And we're talking about the role of mothers and their responsibility that is getting weaker and weaker in this modern, hasty life. But then you said something which was so shocking, I suppose. Who would on earth think right. that there's no need for a mother?
So that sounds pretty extreme to you, right? And I think most people understand that. But I bring that up to sort of show you that there's no substitute for the mother.
Exactly. Right?
There's no substitute for it. Whereas in our lives today, I feel that a lot of mothers have started substituting their own role of the mother for something else. Right? You mentioned like they're doctors and they're engineers or they're something else. And I think that's excellent and they should do all of those things.
Yeah.
But from an Islamic psychology point of view, we would say that it shouldn't come at the expense of, for example, your family life.
Exactly.
It shouldn't come at the expense of like you not being able to raise your children well.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be, you know, that you're sacrificing that role. So you see that it's extreme to see completely taking out the mother out of the picture. I'm seeing we're already doing that in our lives. We're taking the role of the mother out of the picture a little bit. You see how we're doing that practically?
You see, I know a lot of these women who are working and who are at the same time mothers and they're studying. And they're, as I just told you, they're sharing right. some very important roles in society. But I don't say that they themselves are consciously doing that. But the thing is that they're going to go through too much of burdens. They do that. I mean, they would take care of their children. They right. would take care of their family. And they would at the same time study and do their jobs. But the thing is that they are going to go through too much of problems and burdens. And she would feel maybe to some extent, maybe she would feel depressed because she feels like the entire burden of the world is on her yeah. shoulder.
Well, we're saying that, you know, as long as you're not sacrificing your role, mm-hmm. then it's okay for you to do those things. And to like, I was speaking to one of our teachers and he was telling us like a case. He was telling us that, for example, he had a husband and wife that were doctors come to them about a problem that they have with their kid, you know, I think he was a teenager. And you know, this, our teacher, he said, I told him, like, you went to medical school, you learned, you become a doctor. If only you had spent maybe 10 to 20 hours learning the expertise of, for example, raising children.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's great that people can become doctors and engineers, but then if they're forgetting that real natural role, which no one else can substitute, you know, like TV can't substitute it, a maid can't substitute it, a nursery can't substitute that role, that's where the problem lies. And that's why we're becoming weaker. Right?
Yeah. Well, as a woman,
yeah,
I would say, just as I just told you, the much of burden that has been put on women's shoulder has made them not to take care of their, fundamental role. The thing that is greater, as you just said, as human beings, we do not have just physical needs or this physical, we're not physical entities only. We have right. a soul, which is so important. So as the women that are so active in this modern life right now, they do too much of things and they are helping all the human beings because if she's a doctor, then she's helping other women. If she's an engineer, she's helping the entire humanity. But then the thing is that they're going through too much and maybe some of them would come to this point to question that, okay, do I necessarily have to be a mother? Do I necessarily have to have more children? Do I necessarily have to be the one who does all of these things at the same time?
See, this is the whole, this is what I'm saying. Modern psychology, right, has raised these questions. They've taken away the very natural things that are there. So you're talking about women in a very positive way that are doing those things. I'm saying there's some women out there who are, for example, only career-minded, right?
Yeah.
They'll feel that, for example, their career is more important, for example, than looking after their kids.
Okay. Now there comes the point where we have to go for a break, and then we'd come back. The last part of today's episode. Well, you were saying that some women are career minded. That means,
well,
like,
there's nothing wrong with that either, I should add. But let me give you another example where it can cause issues if the person isn't careful, right? So there was another case of a a mother that came with a problem with her teenage son. To not go into too many details, but to come to like the core of the problem of the issue was that because of her job, she would leave her son alone at home for several hours a day.
Okay? It happens a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't understand a teenage son, a teenage boy, what they're going, even a girl, what they're going through, you know, in those years, and you're leaving them alone, you could be causing serious harm to your child.
Just and by to the leaving society them alone in a general scale, yes, because so they're on going to grow up.
And, you know, in this case, the mother was actually, I think, a school principal or something, you know. So she was working at a school. You're right. They were helping someone. They were being good people, you know, but at the expense of their own son's
and
future,
children,
maybe,
yeah,
and their own son's psychology, their own son's mental health. So that's why I'm saying we're making the mistake. You know, we're causing more problems for ourselves in the future. We need to come back a little bit and see what we're doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But then, you know, there's a thing. Women have got an identity for themselves as well. So a woman, a lady, would love to flourish herself, would love to go for education, for a job, for having an active role in society. So she cannot forget about all of those things.
She shouldn't. And we're saying that all of, like, today, modern lifestyle is much, much harder than, let's say, you know, what our moms went through, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's much more, it's much more demanding on people. A lot of people are in a financial position where they must work, you know, where they can't survive without doing that. But with all of this, then you have to understand there's always a cost to pay, right?
Yeah.
And like I mentioned, example, there was a cost to pay there. Well, what should that person do in that situation? Then they should, for example, they shouldn't, like, let's say you arranged your child to be with your uncle or aunt during those hours, right? We're saying you have to find practical solutions to these problems. You can't just like say, hey, I must go look after society and then just, you know, just forget about what's going on at home. Right? If you're not going to be doing that, then you're not, in my opinion, you shouldn't be then out there in society.
Exactly. So if I just want to give the gist of whatever we've been through today, I would say that the thing that you mentioned at the very beginning of today's discussion is so important. I think that is the thing that is causing all these problems, which is to underestimate the role of a mother. Like, for example, I would prefer to have a mother who's a housewife than a mother who's a doctor and is spending all of her time outside home and not taking care of me and not devoting any time for me. But then that housewife mom is going to spend all of her time with me. She's going to be devoted to me. And the mere thought of that would make me think that I'm so important that I could be this person who in the future, as she grows up or as he grows up, would have perfect mental health, I suppose. So we should not actually underestimate the role of a mother and give more value to other jobs or other stuff, like women who are doing jobs outside the home are more important than the women who are not doing any job and they're only mothers or housewives or things like that. Because just I read it somewhere that someone asks a person, what's your mother's job? And then he said, she's an artist. That was very nice because then he gave an example because he was asked, okay, what sort of art your mom creates? Then he said, our home is my mother's artwork. So that was an interesting answer. I have never looked at it like that. Really, the mothers who spend all of their time for their children are the ones who are the greatest artists of the world because they're going to create the next generation. They're going to create the people who are going to share important roles in the coming societies. So this was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
A number of financial and economic institutions warned that Britain will slump into a moderate recession in the first half of 2024 as the struggle for growth remains while borrowing costs stay elevated. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Fears that the United Kingdom is heading for a recession this winter have intensified amid signs that Britain's hard-pressed households are cutting spending as they save for Christmas and higher fuel bills. Two monthly snapshots of retail activity found shops and online outlets struggling because of consumer budgets being squeezed by dearer mortgages and UK's lingering cost of living crisis. The British Retail Consortium, the BRC, the industry's lobby group, and Barclays Bank said sales were down in October once inflation was taken into account. The Bank of England has raised interest rates 14 times since December of 2021, but the downbeat reports from retailers suggest Threadneedle Street's actions to bring down inflation has come at the expense of weaker consumer confidence and lower sales volumes. Barclays says card spending rose by 2.6% in the year to October, significantly lower than the 6.7% inflation rate measured by the latest Consumer Prices Index. The Barclays KPMG monitor of retail activity said sales were up 2.5% on October 2022, but stressed its figures were not adjusted for inflation. News of the slowdown came as the latest health check on the UK construction sector from Standard & Poor's Global and the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply showed house building contracting for an 11th successive month. The Standard & Poor's Global and the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply report showed all three categories of construction, infrastructure, commercial property and house building below the 50 level that marks the cutoff point between the growing and declining sector. But of the three, house building was the weakest, registering a score of 38.5. Meanwhile, evidence that consumers are wary of committing to big-ticket items emerged from the latest car sales figures from the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders. These showed a near 30% year-on-year jump in fleet sales, but only a 0.3% increase to 62,915 in sales to private buyers. Helen Dickinson, the British Retail Consortium's chief executive, said retail sales growth slowed as high mortgage and rental costs further shook consumer confidence. Many households are also delaying their Christmas spending in the hope that they can grab a bargain in the upcoming Black Friday sales. The cost of living squeeze meant more was spent on lower price indulgences. Helen Dickinson said retailers were cutting prices and streamlining operations as they sought to produce an affordable Christmas for their customers, but this was being jeopardised by a £470 million a year rise in business rates facing retailers next year. She called on Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, to freeze rates in this month's autumn statement to prevent extra cost pressure from pushing up prices. Paul Martin, the UK head of retail at KPMG, said, "While consumers are now operating in a lower inflationary environment compared to October of last year, where inflation peaked at over 11%, there is no doubt that the last 12 months have taken a toll on confidence and their ability to spend. Coupled with a higher interest rate environment, dwindling COVID savings and the heating coming back on, beleaguered consumers are thinking very carefully about how they spend their money. As a result, the strong demand that has kept some retailers afloat over the last 18 months is now falling away." The Bank of England said recently it expected the economy to flatline in the second half of 2023. Threadneedle Street has penciled in zero growth rate for the third quarter and 0.1% expansion in the final 3 months of the year. Official figures for the July to September period will be released in the coming days. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. An influential group of economists said the United Kingdom's economy is in a horrible fiscal bind as it heads for recession with no room to cut taxes or increase public spending to offer a boost. The Institute for Fiscal Studies warned that Britain will slump into a moderate recession in the first half of 2024 as the struggle for growth remains while borrowing costs stay elevated. It comes as the Bank of England's chief economist warned that there was still work to do to bring Britain's inflation back under control, a hint that the base interest rate could rise yet again. The Institute for Fiscal Studies said there was little room for the tax cuts wanted by Tory MPs anytime soon in its green budget assessment of the nation's public finances ahead of Chancellor Jeremy Hunt's autumn statement. Using analysis by Citi, the Institute for Fiscal Studies report warned that the United Kingdom would fall into a recession at the start of 2024 that will last for 9 months. It also forecast that gross domestic product GDP would slump by 0.7% next year. Paul Johnson, the director of the Institute for Fiscal Studies, said, "We are in a horrible fiscal bind. The price of our high levels of indebtedness, failure to stimulate growth, and high borrowing costs is likely to be a protracted period of high taxes and tight spending." The Institute for Fiscal Studies said there was no room for tax cuts or spending hikes. despite a six-year freeze on income tax thresholds, would mean an extra £52 billion a year by 2027, the equivalent of raising the basic and higher rate of income tax by 6 pence. Paul Johnson said the amount raised by the fiscal drag process pushes people into higher income tax brackets as pay increases, and this was extraordinary. The Labour Party said the so-called stealth tax rise showed by the Tories had crashed the economy. Darren Jones, the shadow chief treasury secretary, said successive failures by Conservative ministers have left us with low economic growth, high taxes and national debt at the highest level in generations. The British newspaper The Express has also covered the same story. According to new research, around 3.2 million adults in the United Kingdom have missed some type of major bill payment in the last 2 years. The mortgage lender has found 6% of the adult population in the United Kingdom have missed either a mortgage payment, a debt repayment, rent, or energy bill. This comes amid the cost of living crisis, which has resulted in interest rates and energy bills skyrocketing. As a consequence of this, 4 in 10 adults have admitted to having missed multiple payments. Young adults are more likely to have experienced financial difficulty throughout the pandemic as the age group most affected by job instability. Some 11% of the 18 to 34-year-olds missed at least one usual payment in the past 2 years. This is nearly 4 times the amount of over 55s, and 6% of young adults have shared having missed multiple payments. Missing multiple payments could have a serious adverse effect on someone's credit score, which may prevent them from getting a mortgage or loan in the future. Based on the mortgage lender's research, here is a breakdown of the various payments people are failing to pay. 40% missed the utility bill payment, 27% missed paying their council tax, 25% missed their rent payments, and 23% missed personal loan repayments, and 7% missed their mortgage repayments. Peter Beaumont, the chief executive officer of the mortgage lender, broke down why mortgages and other repayments are hard for people to pay off at this moment in time. He explained, "The past 2 years have impacted many people's jobs and salaries, putting a squeeze on household finances, and with the rising cost of living, there is even greater pressure on the nation's finances. This can all lead an individual to miss a regular payment, which then could have a knock-on effect on their access to credit down the line."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.